Good morning. This is Focus 5 Eddie, our morning call and talk show. My name is Jack Brighton. Glad you could listen today. During this hour of the show, we'll try to give you some advice on taking your career to a higher level, what you can do to manage yourself into a better professional life, and whether that be moving to a different field, moving higher in your current field, perhaps moving from labor to management, whatever it is that you want to do with your career. We'll talk about some options that are available to you to go about doing that. With us, Thomas Schenck. He is a management consultant, personal career coach, and principal with the Schenck Development Group in Champaign. He's joined us on this program before. He works with a wide variety of companies and people in those companies to manage themselves better in their day-to-day work life, and we'll talk with him and get his thoughts and also welcome your questions. You have two numbers to call if you're in Champaign, Urbana. You can dial us locally at 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us around the Midwest, 800-222-9455. Those numbers again, 333-WILL. If you match the letters with the numbers, that's what you get. 800 our 800 line, anywhere you hear us, 800-222-WILL. Tom Schenck, good morning.
Well, Jack, good morning to you, and good morning to our audience.
Thanks for being here, and I must say that I try to come prepared to do the show and learn something about the subject so I can ask good questions, but taking your career to a higher level is something I know absolutely nothing about.
Actually, everyone has a little bit of information already if you've even worked in any organization, whether it was a business or whether that's just a not-for-profit, a volunteer organization, even if you're just in school. We already see some things that do and don't work, and maybe that's a good starting point. We need to take some of the lessons that we can gain from just watching people around us. Everyone has seen somebody crash and burn on the job. Everyone has seen someone rise up and do really well. And just looking at that and kind of taking some mental notes is a great starting point.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did wear a suit today at least.
Yes, you did.
Is that going to help?
You look fabulous.
Oh, thanks.
You know, I hate to say that the dress for success concept, although it can be shallow and it can be lack a lot of substance, it actually is important. People do judge us based on how we look. That's one half of it. But the other half of it is we judge ourselves based on how we look. When we look sharp, we feel sharp. When we feel sharp, we act sharp. And I was thinking about that today as I put on a nice shirt and tie to come in here. And even though we're not going to be seen by our audience, I know that when I look sharp, I'm going to be able to communicate more effectively, think a little bit more effectively, and act a little bit more effectively. So even there's a tip that we need to acknowledge as something that is important, regardless of the work environment.
Well, very good. Well, we spoke just before the show. You know, the idea of this was to talk about, you know, if you're in a work situation, professional life, and you want to move to either a better position, a different status within the organization, or perhaps move to a different organization with a higher status or more responsibilities, more rewards, et cetera. I mean, that's one set of issues. But it seems to me also that we could easily talk about, you know, the downside, which is a lot of people are in situations where they might actually even lose the job they have. And they're not even looking at improving their situation. They might be looking at a lateral move or some other kind of move that would enable them simply to pay the mortgage.
Well, it's interesting to talk about this. When I first thought about this program, I was thinking I'd start off by talking about the booming economy and how that affects your career. We hear a lot about all of the economic indicators. They're all looking very good. People are somewhat afraid of inflation, but not really very much. We see profits in organizations are up. Tax revenues for governmental agencies are up. It really is unemployment is way down. It's an employees' market. I know a lot of the clients that I work with for now 2-3 years have been very concerned about finding good employees and then keeping good employees. And this reflects the concerns of organizations across the country in all sectors. So it really does seem like employees are in the driver's seat, and now is maybe the best time to be looking for a job, to think about moving your career to the next level. And then this morning, I was talking with my wife about a dear friend of ours who just found out that the company that he works for has just been bought by some other company. And he found this out through his wife, who heard it on the radio, before they told them at work.
Amazing.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's all too common. They've released the information to the general public before their own employees. He's now looking at probably some kind of a pay freeze. He's already been told that his benefits will be cut dramatically. It's pretty clear that the organization, the new company, is making decisions that are fairly employee hostile. And he's in trouble, and he knows it. Now, fortunately, he's already been taking some steps, and he's going to take some more steps, and hopefully he'll come out great. I think he will. But one of the things that that kind of showed me is it's easy to describe the economy as booming, but I think it's much more accurate to describe the economy as unstable. Yes, there's a lot of opportunity for individuals and organizations, but there's also a lot of uncertainty out there. And I think whatever your big goals are for your career, maybe you want to be a rich CEO, maybe you want to work on and solve some social problem, maybe you just want to have enough money to pay for your kids' college and then retire so you can be reasonably comfortable. But either way, we've got to work on our career so we can accomplish two big objectives. The first big objective is we need to make our career bulletproof. Because as my friend found out, you never know if your company is going to get bought up. You don't know if your not-for-profit is going to get some real bad press and it's going to fold up. You don't know what's going to happen with the overall economy or with your specific industry. So you need to make your career bulletproof so you can survive those bad times. But the other main focus or objective is to make sure that we try to take conscious action to move our career in the direction that we want. In the past, people used to talk about being on the fast track. They used to talk about being on the promotion track. That kind of suggests, first of all, somebody was there to lay down that track. And it also suggests the track is going where we want it to go. And that's not always true. I've been reading a lot of stuff on the boomer generation as compared to the Gen X generation, as compared to what people are now calling the millennials, the millennium generation, the folks who are just ready now to start entering the workforce at the youngest levels. And one of the things that a lot of the Gen Xers and millennials think about when they look at the job market is they don't want to be like the boomers. They don't want to be a slave to their job. They don't want to have to devote 60 or 80 hours a week because somebody else put them on this track. And they want to make some different choices. And actually, I think that's a good model for all of us. Some people love to put in those kind of hours, and they really want to dedicate their life to their job. Nothing wrong with that if it's your choice. But if you find yourself at the end of the 59th hour during the week asking, why am I here? What am I doing? That shows you need to think about your career a little bit. So those are some things I think could get us off to a great start this morning.
Okay. Well, you mentioned the idea, the first point, making your career bulletproof. How do you do that? What does that mean? What do you do? You know, what's the strategy?
Well, I think first and foremost, the thing that you need to do is think of yourself as your own personal services company. Some people call it You, Inc. Tom Peters, in a recent book, called it Brand You. The idea is that we need to think of ourselves as our own little company. Now, your sole client might be the company whose name is on your paycheck at the end of each week. Your clients might be wide and varied like mine. You might be a consultant. You might work within one organization or with many. It doesn't really matter. But you have to think of yourself as your own little business. And that means every day you've got to be asking, how can I make sure my business is profitable? How can I make sure my business is competitive? How can I make sure that I'm serving the customers that are important for me to serve? And I would recommend to everyone Tom Peters' recent book, The Brand You 50. It's a great little book. It's got 50 very specific learning points plus action tips that really focuses on this idea of treating yourself as your own personal services company. It really is about taking charge of your own career, making the decisions, setting the goals that will get you to where you want to go. But the key is you don't let other people rule your career. Brian Tracy, who is a motivator, a trainer, somebody who's been in organizational development for a long time now, international speaker, he always said something that just blew me away when I first heard it. Those that don't have goals are condemned forever to work for those who do. And if you don't take charge of your own career, you will be a tool for other people. And I don't think anyone really wants that. So that's really the starting point, is looking at yourself as a professional services organization. Even if you're inside a company, you got to think about your own goals and then start taking action to create that reality. What else do you need to do? I think another big key for bulletproofing yourself in terms of your career is to make professional development a very high priority habit. A lot of people wait around, and I think it's because of our school training, wait around for other people to tell us what we need to learn. That may have worked when we were in grade school through high school, but it certainly doesn't work when you're an adult. If you wait for your company to tell you what you need to know, you're always going to be behind the curve, and that's a real problem. So first thing I think that people need to do to make self-development or professional development a big priority is get to know your industry, get to know your profession, get to know your field. And it doesn't matter if you're a secretary, it doesn't matter if you're a press operator, it doesn't matter if you're a doctor. You need to know what's current, what's hot, what's new, what are the trends that are coming up in your field. And that's a big part of that development. I think another thing that you can talk about in terms of professional development is how much you invest. Now, ideally, your company is going to help you out. Your company is going to help pay for some training, pay for classes, pay for resources. It doesn't always happen. Even if your company is willing to pay for that stuff, you should do it yourself. One of the things we see is in the best companies in the world, they spend 5 to 7% of their income on research and development on themselves, self-improvement, self-development, training, and all those sorts of things. That's probably a good goal for you to have as an individual as well. Spend 5 to 7% of your income on your own development, workshops, books, tapes, seminars, formal education, going to resources, the community colleges, universities. There's all sorts of resources out there, internet learning. We need to take advantage of those and invest your own time and money. If your company is going to help pay for that, great, go for it. Ask them. Use every resource they're willing to give you, but do it yourself as well.
We have a call to talk with. Let's include them in our conversation. We'll welcome others. Let me just mention again, our guest during this hour, Focus 580, is Thomas Schenck. He is a trainer, consultant, career coach, principal with the Schenck Development Group in Champaign. We're talking about how to manage your career for better success and a lot of things we can talk about if you'd like to join us. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free anywhere else, 800-222-9455. First up, a listener in Urbana on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes, excuse me for calling so early on.
That's all right.
No, that's great.
But I have to be away from the phone, so I thought I'd ask you. You sound like you've got some really good advice, and I hate to ask you this question, but you brought it up.
Fire away. I'm ready for it.
About CEOs. You know, there's such a monoculture out there. I was just reading an article saying, I think it was in the Daily Telegraph out of London, that said that that it's believed that women really make the best managers, and yet there aren't very many women out there that are CEOs. So I was just wondering if you had any advice to those of us who seem to be locked out of that monoculture as to, I'm not one of them, but I know people who are, who as to how to break that. That glass ceiling, and I'm going to have to hang up and listen to it. Oh, thanks.
Thanks for the question.
All right, yes, thank you very much. A couple of interesting points that you bring up. I think I'll start off by saying there's a lot of cause for high hope and positive hope here. The essential demographics of the workplace are changing dramatically, and I think more than anything else, more than any legislation, more than any laws that we can pass, more than any political rallying. It's just the simple question of demographics that's going to really start to change the way the workplace looks. The last reports that I've seen from the Census Bureau are that whites will be a much smaller percentage of the total population and will be the minority within just a few years. I would say 10 to 20 years if I remember my statistics offhand. All the other minorities, whether we're talking about gender minorities, female, whether we're talking about African Americans, Asian Americans, whether we're talking about any other kind of minority, are going to be the majority soon. And I think that by itself is going to start changing the color and sex of the top people in organizations. But I think you're also seeing some other things going on. I mentioned the generations before. Boomers have made some very conscious attempts to start to include more diversity into the workplace, and that trend is going to be continued through the Gen Xers and the millennial generation. Some interesting research on the Generation X kids, people, adults now, is that they are the least racist and least sexist of all living generations. And I think that's a great sign. They're going to bring those values into the workplace, and that's another force that's going to start changing the way the top in organizations look. I think the other thing that we're going to see that's a little bit different from the past, the industrial age was hallmarked by the megalith organizations, the giant corporations, and size was everything. We're seeing in this dot-com world a lot of organizations that are really staying small and staying lean, and that is going to mean much more opportunity for a wider variety of people. So there's another thing to be optimistic about when we talk about what who is making it to the top and why. I think the monoculture, just through the demographics, through some of the changes in the upcoming generations as they mature and enter into leadership positions and organizations, it's going to change that monoculture. The other thing that I see some good signs are there's a growing number of minorities, specifically African Americans, specifically women, who are really starting to feel that there is some discrimination still. I don't think that's a question. However, many feel optimistic that any discriminations there is not going to affect them negatively. They still see a lot of opportunity in terms of careers. They see a lot of possibilities, and they are starting to learn much more what they need to do to get ahead. And I think some of the key things that you'll see are mentoring programs where people are actually taking new employees of all kinds through what is it like to be an employee in this organization? What are the hallmarks of success here? What are the politics like? And who do you need to know to be able to get the opportunities? Now, it still is up to the individual to do a good job and to perform at the expected levels. But like never before, we're starting to see more mentoring programs and organizations that help people get successful fast and avoid some of the pitfalls and mistakes that new employees typically make. So there's another sign of optimism.
Okay. One of the issues that many people face in trying to change their status within an organization or their status as a professional is perception. And maybe it's self-perception, maybe it's the way others perceive them, maybe it's both. But it seems that a lot of times we get stuck in viewing things as static when in fact there's a lot of potential for change. But because we perceive them as static, you know, we don't make that the necessary steps to bring about the change or to bring about a change in perception on the part of others toward the individual. And I think that I've seen this happen in a lot of organizations where, you know, somebody's done a job for 10 years and let's say they're an editor and, you know, they want to, you know, move to a management level or publishing, you know, an assistant publisher or whatever. But these are clearly different roles. And I'm wondering if you have any suggestions about changing perceptions, you know, how you go about getting people to agree that it's okay for you to change.
Actually, that is a big issue. And I think one of the problems that many people face is they try to make that leap all in one jump. And it's too big a canyon for a lot of folks to deal with, both the individual trying to make the leap and for coworkers and other people in the organization. What I would suggest is if you're looking to move, say, from where you are to a management position, if that's what your goal is, what I would suggest is you start off by volunteering or working on different kinds of projects that move you in that direction. A couple of big advantages here. First of all, if you go to your boss and say, listen, I want to be a supervisor or manager, that might be immediately threatening to that person. They might not want to help you. So that can create some problems there. But if you go to your boss and say, you know, I'd like to work on this project. I heard about this project that's going on in another department or in another section within our department. I'd like to have some time to work on that. That's a lot less threatening. And at the same time, it gives you a chance to try out that new role, to try out some new responsibilities, to build some new skills. And in fact, that's one of the big career advancement strategies that people are really focusing in on today. It's working on projects or, if you don't like that word, working on new assignments, asking for a little bit of stretch from the people that you work with in trying out just a new assignment. Nobody will see it as threatening. You're not going to have to dive in with both feet. Instead, you get to try a little piece. You get to experience it yourself. You can decide yourself, do I really like this? I tried it on a couple of weeks for this little project. I tried it on a day for this little task. Was it fun? Was it enjoyable? Did it get me excited? Did I hate it immediately? Well, that's something you should probably know beforehand. So I think the key is you start working on projects. People start to see you trying out that new role. They get comfortable with the idea that you are able to do some new things. And that makes it easier for them to shift their perceptions about you. It also makes it easier for you to shift your perceptions about yourself. And that also helps make that transition.
We talked a bit about, you know, the full employment economy and, you know, the notion that it is an employee market. At the same time, it's a very chaotic market in the workplace. And we hear a lot of companies are having a hard time filling positions, particularly technical positions.
Yes.
There are a lot of very specific skills in engineering in particular and software, you know, and a whole bunch of these technical areas where there just don't seem to be people to fill those jobs. And I'm wondering if you think that the potential is there in a lot of people's case to move into those roles, and maybe they don't have the training at this point, but that perhaps individuals are overlooking their own potentials and corporations and companies and businesses are overlooking the potential of their own employees.
Well, I think that is often a problem for people, and I think that's part of your long-term career strategy. Mm-hmm. Wherever you are today, you might want to consider moving into a position that requires a lot more education. Well, you have to plan for that, and that might mean you stay in a job right now that you're not completely satisfied with. It might mean that you stay in a job that really doesn't coincide very well with your true interests, with your real aptitude and so on. But if you keep that job now as a means to give you the freedom or the finances so that you can get that extra degree, well, 4 or 5 years later, you can have that degree. But that takes planning. And I think that sometimes we get caught up in day-to-day survival on the job that we forget to also plan ahead. And I think it's one of those situations where the best time to start is now. If you are thinking about getting involved in some new field, and maybe that requires that advanced degree, maybe that requires just some advanced training, not necessarily an academic degree, the best time to start is right now. Ask yourself, what kind of training do I need? What kind of education do I need? How long will it take me? Where can I go to get that education? And then what do I need to do to get myself to the point where I can go after that education? It might mean that you have to stay in your current position. You have to monitor your personal finances for 2 years before you can be in a position to then go to that university, to go to that community college, to just to go to that vocational training program so that you can get in and get the information, the education, and the training that you need. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at it in terms of that long term. But the other side is, if you don't start now, you'll never start, and you'll limit yourself. So it's part of that long-term career process. You know, one of the things that just reminds me of, and this sounds maybe strange for a career management program, but I've seen more and more literature that really put a fine point on the whole question of personal finances. If you can't manage your personal finances, it's almost impossible for you to manage your career because you'll always be at the whim of your organization. If you're only living paycheck to paycheck, you won't really feel like you've got the freedom to try out a new job, try out a new position. You won't feel like you have a freedom to leave your current organization if it's not working for you and go someplace else where you might be happier. And the personal finance issue is really a key thing for a lot of people, not necessarily because your personal finance skills are going to look good on a resume or impress your boss, but because personal financial security is one way to give you more options, not just I can afford to get that college education or I can afford to get that to go to that workshop, but I can feel secure enough where if my job is really intolerable, I can leave. Some people suggest you should have a whole year worth of savings so that if you want to leave your position, you've got a year worth of security. Now, that's a lot.
Yeah.
If you can, start with 2 or 3 months. That's a great starting place. I've seen that recommended a lot too. But that financial security produces psychological security. That psychological security will help you make better decisions for your career. So that's kind of an interesting point, mm-hmm. not a direct mm-hmm. one in most people's thinking, but it really does relate to career management.
Very interesting. We're about at our midpoint with Thomas Schenck. He's a career consultant, management consultant. He's a principal with Schenck Development Group in Champaign, and we're talking about career management, a variety of issues. If you would like to join the conversation, if you have questions or comments on the topic, you can call us around Champaign-Urbana at 333-WILL. Toll free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-WILL. It seems that traditionally the workplace has been fairly stable, at least you know, over the past century, and suddenly we've encountered a period of very rapid change, and it seems to be accelerating change. And I think that, at least or in the media business, I can say that certainly, is the cause of a lot of stress around the workplace. You have to learn new technologies and new techniques, even just new computer programs, and new operating systems and, you know, new ways of thinking about the tools that we're using. And it seems to me that that presents both a danger and an opportunity.
I think it is the case for certain that organizational life has fundamentally changed. It used to be much more stable. It used to be able to count on things being about the same for long periods of time. There was always change in organizations. There was always changes in that basic business economy, but it really has accelerated, and it doesn't look like it's going to stop. I find it interesting. You talked about change in the media industry. You see it in really every industry. We've been going through deregulation in a number of big industries, and you hit deregulation, all of a sudden we've got mergers left and right. We saw it starting off in the telephone industry. We see it in airlines. We see it in – now it's just already starting in the utility industries. And we see mergers and acquisitions happening in really all sectors. We see even not-for-profits merging and combining and trying to find better ways to use their limited resources. And so we see this over and over and over again. It doesn't look like it's going to slow down. And I think that we have to deal with changing technology. We have to deal with new corporate or organizational cultures. We have to deal with new social agendas that create new kinds of work rules. Think about the impact of the American Disabilities Act. That has radically changed how people look at not just handicapped or differently abled people in the workplace, but it changes the way we do a lot of things in the workplace and how we think about being sensitive to the needs of all employees. These are changes that people have to continually move with. And we also talked about some of the demographic changes. One of the things that we have to get into the mindset is being that lifelong learner. I talked a little bit about before about making sure that you're making professional development a priority. Really is not just a here's things I do for the job. It's really looking at all of your entire life and becoming a lifelong learner. We know a lot of things about lifelong learners. They tend to be happier in the long run. They stay mentally sharp longer. They tend to be people who are more able to adapt to the changes that happen in life. And whether you're on the job or whether you're at home, you're going to have lots of changes. So these are all good things to try to build. The first key, I would say, for becoming a lifelong learner is to do frequent skills audits. What kind of skills do you need right now to do the job you have to do, whether that's at work or at home? What kind of skills are you going to need in the short-term future and the long-term future? And then evaluate yourself on those skills. How am I doing on the skills? Am I getting the results that I want to get? That's probably the key question. And you can ask that question in every area of your life. Personal finances. Do you have the money that you want to have? If the answer is no, there's an opportunity for some skill building. Now, on the other hand, your relationship with your boss. If that's going great, you've already got those skills mastered and you don't need to focus in on them. So we always want to, I think, look at applied learning when it comes to being a lifelong learner. If you can read a little bit about everything, and one of my personal goals, modeled after Thomas Jefferson, he had a library of 5,000 books, and my goal in life is to read 5,000 books. So far, I think I'll have to live to be about 125 at the rate that I'm going, but that's one of my goals. You know, that's nice. But that's not a goal for everyone. It's really not practical in a lot of ways because I read a lot of books that don't help me do my work better or that don't help me live my personal life more effectively. They're just fun books. They're literature, the things that maybe enrich my mind but don't really help me get jobs done. Not everybody has the time for that, yeah. And that's a big consideration.
You should get a job here. We'll give you some books to read.
Yeah, there you go. Actually, I get a lot of good recommendations from this program. Yeah. So what we want to do is have focused learning, and we want to learn about things that are going to help us perform better, and that really is a bottom line. A gentleman named Peter Senge wrote a book called The Fifth Discipline, which is about organizational learning, and that was really one of the big points. To be effective as individuals on the job and also as organizations, we have to learn with a purpose, learn with a focus, and learn so that we can perform better, and that's the ultimate test of learning. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't help us perform better in whatever arena we're talking about, then it wasn't good learning. Harvey McKay just put it more simply, the time for the Renaissance man was in the Renaissance. And it might be wonderful to know a little bit about everything, but it's just not practical. Save that for your off time. Save that for when you really, really have the extra time and you can pursue those interesting intellectual lines of reading or mm-hmm. learning. But when we need to divvy up our time carefully, when we need to focus on the small amount of time that we have, we need to be focused learners. And that means, again, finding out what are the areas where I have some skill deficiencies and then figuring out what's going to help me do better in those particular areas. Prioritize those areas. I always suggest that we need to look at our technical skills. We need to look at our relationship skills, and we need to look at the skills that we use to manage ourselves. And those are three real important areas to be focused on that lifelong learning.
One of the things that I was thinking about with regard to, you know, the change in the institutions where we work is that a lot of the power relationships are also changing. And it's changing in a very chaotic way. In other words, maybe a couple generations ago, we used to completely understand the hierarchies where we worked. It was very hierarchical, and the lines of authority and power and accountability were fairly clear. And we seem to have gone through a flurry of sort of management fads and, you know, organizational patterns that has thrown a lot of those things into question. And I think that in, you know, a lot of people that I talk to are left with the feeling that they don't quite know what the pattern is, you know, and that, yes, there is power in the organization, and maybe it doesn't reside with them. Or maybe part of it does, but there are other managers who are more powerful. Or, you know, these kinds of lines are no longer as clear as they used to be. And then you have, as you said, the Gen Xers and the Millennium generation coming in, and these people seem to have a completely different notion about power and maybe not, don't have the same traditional understanding of hierarchy that previous generations had. And so what this means is that the rules of the game are not as clear as they used to be. How do you sort that out?
Well, I think the key is we need to really acknowledge the importance of relationships. And that's where the most powerful and the most reliable form of power is going to come from. It's the relationships that you have. It's the relationships with people inside your organization, starting with your boss, starting with your followers if you're a leader yourself, starting with your coworkers, but then moving outward from there. How many contacts do you have with other people in the organization? The people who are the most secure, the people who ride out bad times in their organization, tend to be the people who are the best connected. And the more connected you are within your organization, the more likely it is that even if things go wrong, let's say your organization changes strategic focus and your job function is no longer necessary. If you don't have any connections, if you don't have a sponsor, a mentor, a coach, if you don't have somebody who's willing to go to bat with you or for you, then chances are it's going to be awfully hard for you to find a new position. On the other hand, if you've worked on projects or committees or task forces, if you've worked on tasks with other people in the organization and they know the quality of your work and they know you as an individual, those are going to be contacts who might be able to help you find that new position. Now, you also have to build networks outside of your organization, and I think this is where a lot of people fall down as well. You need to join and get active in your professional association, whatever that is. If you're in a union, great, get active. Don't just be a member. Be active in that organization to develop your list of contacts. If you're a doctor or a lawyer, there are professional associations. I know my own industry, the training industry, has an organization called the American Society for Training and Development. That's my professional association. You know, we have to make sure we get involved in these kinds of organizations. Again, builds up that network of contacts. You never know, and this is one of the things I find most interesting today. Today's coworker, who you can't get along with, could be tomorrow's boss.
Right.
Could be tomorrow's customer. Could be tomorrow's supplier. People change jobs all the time. People change positions. You don't know. And that's why we need to focus on the relationships. You know, it comes down to making good contacts with people, keeping in touch with people, providing real value. There's a lot of great books on networking, and that's sort of the buzz phrase right now. But it really is about building a set of relationships where you help other people and they help you. It's not that kind of negative old boy network that sometimes we hear about still that just won't die. But it's more about developing positive relationships that are based on mutual self-interest. It's honest and upfront, and we're not trying to circumvent hierarchies. We're not trying to circumvent the power of other people. We're not using this as a way to gang up on people politically. But we're trying to help find the resources that we need to do our job better and provide resources for other people so they can do their job better. So those are a couple of different ways to look at that. But really, relationships are key. Again, Harvey McKay, he wrote that book, Swim with the Sharks Without Being Eaten Alive. Mm-hmm. He said, the person with the biggest Rolodex wins. And even in the days of Palm Pilots and whatnot, I think that basic guideline still holds. People who have the most number of contacts are always going to be the most secure in any organization, regardless of who else has power, regardless of who else is making decisions, and regardless of what market forces are pushing and pulling that particular organization.
Very good. We have another caller to include in our conversation. We have just about 15 minutes left with Thomas Schenck from the Schenck Development Group in Champaign talking about career development, a variety of issues, and time for a few more callers if you'd like to join us. 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Anywhere else, 800-222-9455. Another Urbana listener on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes, I was wondering if you just guess could comment as to what it takes to make a successful career change. I mean, we talk a lot about moving up within their agencies or whatever, but beyond the I would assume learning and education, all that is important for a career change. But what else would it take to make a successful career change?
Great question, and I think it's important for us to take a look at this. First and foremost, you probably should take a look at where you are right now and decide: is it really time for a change? You know, if you haven't had any new responsibilities in your job for 3 or 4 years, that's telling you you've probably been parked or you've been pigeonholed. People think that you may be reliable, but you're not really worthy of new assignments. If you don't get any high visibility or high power projects, that may be a sign that your career is in a little bit of trouble. If you've been passed over for a promotion or actually got a demotion, those are pretty clear signs that your career or your job is in trouble. Again, I mentioned if the organization's strategic focus has changed and your function is now not really important to the organization, that's a time. Sometimes you just realize you're in the wrong job for you. Maybe you got in for the wrong reasons. Maybe you experience what a lot of people experience. I call it career shift. You start doing one job and then you just take another and another, and sooner or later you find yourself in a position that you really weren't even prepared for. So how do you find that new job? How do you find that new career? I think there's a couple of very clear steps. And first and foremost, it starts with your values. You have to be real clear on what your values are. A lot of people find that they're spending too much time in a job and they realize that they want more time for their family. Well, that's a value choice, and you need to be clear on that with yourself. Is that kind of choice going to limit your career opportunities? Yes, it is. It's not going to limit in terms of making them worse. It's going to limit, though, in terms of making them different, and that's really a different distinction to make as well. If family is important to me and I want to spend weekends and I want to spend nights at home, I'm going to be able to say yes to some jobs and no to others. I've got to be clear about that. If, on the other hand, I don't have any kids right now, maybe I'm just married and my wife has got her own career, well, you know, I have some more options. Maybe travel would be great for me at that point in my life. Maybe that would be something I would even enjoy. Well, that's something that I need to be clear on right up front. So, first of all, you need to know your values and figure out how they're going to impact any career or job you choose. I would suggest, if you really want to make a job change, start by taking all the assessments that you can take. Magazines, books have self-tests. There's a lot of good books on finding the work you love, that sort of thing. Personality tests, skill assessments, career interest assessments, all of these things are available. You can get them online. There's a lot of books that have these things. Career placement centers in colleges, universities. There are some psychological counseling centers that offer these sort of services. But take all of these assessments that you can and start to look for the patterns. What kind of jobs do you find yourself gravitating toward over and over and over again? And that's another great way to get started. I'd suggest writing a total resume. Sit down, and this might take you a week or 2 weeks, but sit down and write down every single job you've ever held. Job for pay, volunteer position in some kind of organization, jobs that you just had while you were working through school. Write down each of those jobs and write down what were the main duties, what were the main responsibilities. Then what you're going to do is you're going to start putting an X next to the duties and responsibilities you hated, the ones that drove you nuts, the ones that you swore you'd never do again. And go back to that list and put a star next to the responsibilities and duties that really got you excited, you really enjoyed, you found them fun when you were doing them, the day just flew by. That's going to help you develop an ideal career profile, and that's where we want to get toward, is creating that ideal career profile. What are the kinds of tasks and duties that you really loved from all your past work experience? What are the kinds and duties that you really hated from all your past work experience? That's going to tell you a lot about where you should be looking for a new job. Another thing that you might try, and I've seen some people use this and it really can be effective, is go back and think about all of the careers that you ever said, boy, I'd like to be a. So start back from when you were 5 years old. So everybody's going to put firemen on their list. Everybody's going to put police officer on their list probably. So go ahead and just think about all the careers where you ever said that would be a cool thing for me to do. That would be
astronaut for me.
Astronaut, okay. There you go. Right, yeah. That's a good one. And again, What would you think, two or three or four or five, what do you think are the key responsibilities of somebody who had that career? And again, what you're looking for are the patterns. I know some people find, well, when I went through college myself, I came to college thinking I was going to be a veterinarian. That's what my dad did. I thought I would do the same thing. Well, I changed my mind on that. And I decided, well, what do I want to do? And I realized I wanted to do something in the helping fields, but I didn't really know what. So I started to write down what were some of the things I enjoyed doing. And one of them happened to be speaking in front of groups. One of them happened to be sharing information and ideas and having people come back and tell me, hey, thanks, that helped me. That was one idea I could use. That was neat. Well, that led me to start looking into this area of psychology and then more directly into social psychology and industrial psychology. In fact, I did one more thing as I just tried stuff. When I made the decision to get out of my pre-veterinary medicine program, I decided to, when I was here at the University of Illinois, I decided to go ahead and take some psychology courses. I took five 200-level psychology courses in one semester, and it was the shotgun approach. I figured there was going to be one or two that I'd love, one or two maybe that I hated, and then, you know, whatever was left in the middle. And actually, that's exactly what happened. But what I did was, in a safe way, I tried out a lot of different things and found out what really interests me. And that's another strategy to help you find the kind of job or career that you really enjoy. Now, you take all these different analyses that we've talked about, you put them all together, and you look for the patterns. What are the things that keep coming up over and over and over again? What are the things that you really can tell get you excited? And develop that ideal job or ideal career profile. It'll tell you the kinds of duties and responsibilities you enjoy and the kinds you want to avoid. Now, you have to go out and find out, is there a job that fits that kind of profile?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you can do, I know the Department of Labor has a giant manual basically listing all kinds of jobs, and it usually will give you a title and maybe some brief description of what that job is all about. You can just go to people. If you were to call a doctor, maybe you'd have to call five doctors. One of them might be willing to sit down with you over a lunch or a dinner and say, here's what the job is like on a day-to-day basis. You might talk to a statistical quality analysis manager, and they'll be able to tell you what that job is about. You might talk to a supervisor. You might talk to somebody who does telephone sales and actually find out from their perspective. A lot of organizations and a lot of individuals are really pretty positive about sharing their experience with their job with somebody who's curious. And it's a great way to just kind of figure it out for yourself. Ask if you can shadow them for a half a day or a day. Ask if you can just sit in their office while they go through their normal day. And that's another way to figure out, is this really the kind of job that I would want to do? If you start to narrow that down, so you've got your ideal job or career profile, and that's kind of a big, broad statement. You narrow that down to some possible positions. Now, start to see if you can find ways to add those into your life. Could you volunteer for an organization that uses some of the same skills or positions? Could you volunteer in your own job right now for some of the same kinds of work that's in your ideal job? In other words, test it out. You want to test drive those kinds of jobs, responsibilities, and duties so that you can see if it really is something that you like. But I do want to go back and say, career counselors, college placement offices, there are lots of services available online that will help you identify what kinds of specific jobs are really the kinds that you're going to enjoy. And take advantage of those. All kinds of self-tests and so on. Does that help? Does that give you any ideas there?
Yeah, sure it does. Thanks a lot.
Great. My pleasure.
Thank you.
And good luck. One of the things that you mentioned is values. And I think that's a really interesting point because you suggest that people consider their values. I've seen a lot of situations where there's a mismatch between an individual and a workplace based on values, that they thought that this was an activity they would like to do, and suddenly they find that that there is this mismatch of values. And I guess that's, you know, that has me thinking about how a lot of people go into situations without really assessing that. And I'm wondering if you could talk about how to do that.
Values really are the key to happiness in life. You cannot be happy in life if you're living in a way that's inconsistent with your values. Now, unfortunately, it's not always easy. You know, the easiest way to tell what your values are? Very simple. Look at your checkbook and look at your date book. The way you spend your money and the way you spend your time tells you exactly what your values are. I know a guy who says he loves his family, but you know what he does on every weekend? He's out on the boat drinking beer with his buddies. He's not spending his time with his family, and he's not spending his money with his family. I would challenge and say, maybe you love your family, but they're certainly not a top priority. On another example, I met a guy who was in an organization that was going through reengineering. This was probably about 5 years ago. Reengineering, downsizing, whatever you want to call it. He felt that the process was morally wrong. He felt what it does to employees is just something that's not acceptable. Even though he was not deselected, he chose to leave that company because he realized it wasn't the right company for him. And that was a tremendously powerful moral stand, but it was one that was totally consistent with his values. And that's the kind of thing we need to be very clear on. If you want to be happy in life, you have to understand your values. And the best way to do that is, again, look to see where you're spending your time and where you're spending your money. That tells you what's really important to you. You can see that in individuals and organizations and in societies. Mm-hmm. We say as a society, we value education. But when you look to see how much money we spend on schools and how much teachers are paid, I'd have to challenge whether we really value education or not as a society. And it's a great, great way to tell. I would say look at your organization's mission statement, if you've got one. Look at your organization's top goals and priorities and ask yourself, are these things that I can get behind? Are these exciting to me? Or do I feel a little embarrassed when I have to tell my friends I work for this company, this organization? Do I feel a little uncertain? Are there some goals or values that my company talks about that I really don't feel comfortable with? It could be that that's a sign that says your values are not real consistent with your work life. Those are some things that we really need to consider, not only for the question of life happiness and quality of life, but we also have to consider it for our effectiveness on the job. We're going to be much more effective if we're working in an organization that we have good alignment between our values and the organization's values.
Do you think that there are things we can do as individuals in organizations to address some values that we feel the organization lacks? I mean, how do you go about affecting corporate culture and the ethical environment at work?
I would say, since we only have a couple minutes, I would say quickly, first and foremost is you start where you are. First, make sure your own values and your actions that flow from those values are in alignment. A lot of times people like to talk about values, but they don't follow their own values. That's a problem. Mm-hmm. But start with your own values. Then go to the people that you're working with. In your own work team, start a discussion about what's important and what values we should be working on and treat it as a discussion. I wouldn't go in on a soapbox. I wouldn't go in pounding my little list of 10 commandments and say, we all should do this. I would certainly pose it as a question and say, listen, I think we should talk about the values that we're using here. And a lot of people will base that right off the corporate values, and they'll say, are these values really the ones that our team wants to have? And if so, how do we do it? Mm-hmm. One of the most powerful exercises that I've taken teams through is taking the corporate values, which are often kind of general and nice PR pieces, but they're not real practical, and asking the hard question, how do we do that value here? If integrity is our value for the organization, in our team, this week, with these customers, with these coworkers, on these projects that we're working on, how do we do integrity? What does it look like? What are the behaviors that would support that? And you'd be surprised when one individual starts to take action and when one team starts to take action, you can create organizational change. But I think it's got to start where you are, living consistently with your values, and then influencing other people, having those discussions and talking about the ethical challenges and talking about the ethical successes that every organization is going to have.
Well, I appreciate that very much, and there's much more we could talk about. We're here winding down on our time, but I'll suggest that if you'd like to come back, we'd love to have you.
We'd love to come back. Okay. It was a good morning, and I hope that people heard some interesting things about their career. I would just leave with the idea that don't let other people manage your career. It's something that you have to work on yourself, make your career bulletproof by doing the kind of things that make you improve that you're an effective employee, and then think in long term. Plan out your career, and it might be a 5, a 10, a 20-year plan. But everyone can do it, and I want to suggest that you do.
Our guest has been Thomas Schenck. He is the principal with Schenck Development Group. He's a trainer, career consultant, and manager. And thanks very much for being here, Tom.
Thank you. Take care.